It's 8:18. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, coming up later this week, early winter service beginning, and the studio will tell us about that, as well as some of the other transportation plans happening this winter. I have Kenzie Colson sitting as her new job as Transit Quality Manager. Alfred Knotts is Park City Municipal Transportation Planning Manager. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's start with you. As I mentioned, November 16th, we've got our early winter service beginning. What does that mean?
We do. So I'm excited to announce the Ecker Hill Park and Ride is opening this Friday the 16th in conjunction with our early winter transit service. Now, the Ecker Hill Park and Ride is it's a 400-stall lot located on Kilby Road across the street from the Ecker Hill Middle School. This is really exciting because it's going to offer great parking options for commuters and for skiers and employees. Summit County, in conjunction with Park City Transit, will be offering really frequent bus service at approximately 10-minute intervals. And so that starts this Friday, and we wanted to come share the news about that, as well as some of the route changes and some opportunities for the community to connect with us here in transit.
Okay, so we're talking about the Electric Express driving out to the Ecker Hill lot?
Actually, it will be serviced by the Pink Route and the Lime Route. And so that's primarily where some of our changes are this year. The Pink will now travel from Jeremy Ranch to the Ecker Hill Park and Ride to the Kimball Junction Transit Center, and then it will penetrate all the way up to the Canyons Village, up to Grand Summit. And the Lime bus this year, if you're familiar with these routes, the Lime will be streamlined to run from the Ecker Hill Park and Ride and all the way into town to the Park City Mountain Base. Now, this means the Lime will no longer go into Prospector area. And so to compensate for that, we'll be running additional yellow buses over in Prospector that will go all the way up to Deer Valley. And for those who know, the yellow is kind of an express route from Prospector up to Main Street. So I think that neighborhood's going to be really excited to have increased frequency.
Okay. So if you can't take the pink bus from Ecker Hill to Park City Mountain Resort or Deer Valley Resort, you're going to have to get off at Canyons and get on another bus?
That's correct. If you choose pink, the pink is really designed to get those commuters who want to go all the way up to the Canyons Village. But if you want to transfer, it's a great option to connect to Kimball Junction Transit Center or the Canyons Hub, as we call it, which is the area by the 7-Eleven.
All right. And then again, with the Lime, you can only get to Park City. I mean, nobody can get to Deer Valley from one of these buses.
Well, they can. And in fact, it's a quick transfer. By using the pink and the lime routes to service this lot, we've increased the frequency to the point that while it involves a transfer, people can make such a quick connection to the Electric Express or to other routes. And this is kind of the direction we're headed. In the past, our routes have been resort-focused but have made large loops through town. They've been extremely long, and that makes it difficult for a lot of folks to use certain buses. Alfred can talk more about that.
Yeah, I guess, though, if we're wanting people, though, to use this, to go skiing, we're not making it that easy. I mean, you say it's going to be quick, but, I mean, it could be at least three buses to get to Deer Valley.
Well, I think for the Park City Mountain Base and for the Canyons skier and those employees, this lot is going to be as quick as it gets. The Lime will actually be faster than making connections and even transferring to the Electric Express.
Well, and as you know, people ride the bus, if they can get there quickly. But when it takes long, they're like, I'm just going to drive, right? So how are we going to change that mentality?
We're still trying to work on some of the neighborhood collector services, the express routes. We're always going to kind of have that issue of transferring. But again, the convenience of transit, the Wi-Fi, the free fare, and then the convenience of not having to park, where you can just essentially have front door service, also makes it a very attractive option and alternative.
Okay. Are we going to regulate the free parking at Ecker, or we think that we've got enough spots for everybody?
At this time, I think there are plenty of spots, and as we get into the winter and we see more and more cars parking there, there could be some spots carved out specifically for Vail, I believe, has rights to about 100 spots. The lot has over 400, though. And we expect that as people learn about the lot and try it out, and as Alfred said, it it sounds cheesy that the bus would be more convenient, but a lot of people, once they make the transition to not having to park their car in you know, certain locations, and in this case, I think a lot of people know if you drive all the way to the resort bases at 9 o'clock, you're probably too late.
Let's talk a little bit about the Prospector routes. I mean, this is something I know you've been working on, and you had the neighborhood up in arms last year when you took away the, I think it was the red bus, right, out of the Prospector neighborhood. So the yellow bus has been the express, usually going from Prospector just down Comstock, the interior of Prospector Square, and then it would take you to just right to Deer Valley.
Essentially to Main Street and then to Deer Valley. Correct.
Okay, and so that stays?
That stays, and in fact, it'll have more frequency than last year. And so in this case, I think that the entire neighborhood's going to have the convenience of the red that they strongly requested last year, as well as more yellow frequency all the way to Deer Valley. We have a lot of employees for Deer Valley in that area who are going to enjoy that yellow bus.
All right. You'll have to take the red, though, if you want to go to Park City Mountain?
That's correct.
Okay. And again, that red will also see increased frequency, or?
The red will be, in a sense, it actually will be more frequent because it will terminate at the Old Town Transit Center. And so it's a shorter loop this year. It will be, it'll be great service if you're going to the Park City base or to Old Town.
Okay. Where did it end before?
Before it was looping up to Deer Valley last year.
And did you take it off of Annie Oakley?
No buses will be on Annie Oakley.
Okay. Let's see. The Camas commuter. Let's talk about that.
So this is another really exciting enhancement. The Camas commuter has exceeded expectations for ridership, and it's been going really well. So we are increasing the day's service now. We'll go 7 days a week. Last year, it was only Monday through Friday. And so we expect that to be popular, especially because we are a resort town. A lot of people don't work the conventional Monday through Friday.
All right. So is it going to stop? I know there was some concern about where it stopped, like near the Black Ridge Rock, where you have a lot of, again, employees, or is it straight from Camas to the hospital?
It'll follow its existing route. So it'll go over to the Black Rock area. They're also adding some stops up into the hospital area also. To be able to serve that more frequently as well.
All right. And that's where it ends, isn't it? At the hospital? And then they have to catch another bus there? Or
if you're headed to the junction, you can catch a bus from the hospital, and that's called the Camas Link. But if you want to come all the way into town on Kearns, then you can continue on the bus all the way to Park Ave Condos, we call it, which is the stop across from the Fresh Market. And if you're headed skiing, for example, on a Saturday or Sunday, you can catch an immediate transfer from that Park Ave Condos to the Park City base.
Or
of course, the Electric Express up.
Correct.
Or Deer Valley, too, if you
Correct.
Wanted to. You can catch a Deer Valley bus there as well. Okay. So as I mentioned, we're talking about the early season starting Friday. How would things change then when the full winter schedule goes into effect December 7th?
So that's a good question. Typically, early winter is an enhanced version of our fall service. And as we know, a lot of employees are coming into town, and we're kind of ramping up for the full deal. This year, our full winter starts December 7th, and that day we'll start running our blue route, which serves Thanes Canyon. And so that's a standard fare. Right now, Thanes is served by a long green route, basically. So we'll create some efficiencies there on the blue, as well as we'll have enhanced hours to Empire Pass and Silver Lake on the orange and purple.
Okay. So is this as a result that we have new buses to use, or we haven't gotten those new electric buses?
Those are still on order. Those are due to be received probably in the middle of the winter. So we're just using our existing rolling stock. We did get new buses last year also. So we're kind of on a continuous replacement cycle right now also. So that will expand the fleet on the electric side up to 13.
Yeah. It just sounds like, adding the blue route, more expanded coverage or more frequency and Prospector, that you need more buses to do that, or not necessarily, huh?
Well, we've created some efficiencies. And as I mentioned, the lime and pink are kind of a big change this year. But we're utilizing existing stock in those areas and yet streamlining these routes. So we save a little bit there.
All right. Coming up, you've got a open house. Tell me about that.
We do. So this Wednesday, the 14th, we'll be at the Park City Library from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. You can come visit us there and we can talk intimately about your route and choices and the details. We'll also be at the Kimball Junction Transit Center this Wednesday, the 14th, from 4 to 6. And so please give us a call, stop by an open house, or check out our website, and we'd love to share all these exciting changes.
Yeah. Have you updated the bus app, or is that it?
We actually received an RFP on Friday for a new app, but we will be using our existing technology through the winter period right now and get all those feeds uploaded and make sure the information is accurate and up to date. As Kinsey mentioned, we're going to do some of those open houses, and then we also want to kind of do an impromptu open house at the Old Town Transit Center also, just to make sure the riders are getting all the information, kind of have a rider appreciation. Again, kind of just ramping up for winter. Winter will arrive, I'm sure it will. It always does. We want to make sure we kind of get the information out. Inform people about their travel behaviors. Know before you go. Look at the UDOT TravelWise app. We're pushing that out also. And then we'll also be implementing and opening our traffic operations center here locally at the Park City Police Department, which will be manned on those very, very peak days. So that'll be around Christmas time through the New Year's holiday, Martin Luther King weekend, and then also looking at our typical busy time during President's Weekend. And not only do we have Sundance, we have the World Championships that fall right on the end of the Sundance Festival. So it will be a busy, busy time during that time. But we are ramping up with a lot of these new services, putting more active transportation management strategies in place. Again, looking at our cameras and our signal feeds and everything that will be manned here locally.
So you can actually change signal times and things like that?
Not me. I don't think anybody wants me doing that. But we will have people that are traffic engineers that are up here that are on the UDOT contract. So they will be communicating directly with the TOC, which is the Traffic Operations Center in Salt Lake. And they will have direct access to that technology and that adaptive signal system.
Okay. And again, that's just going to be on those busy, busy days.
Yes. We want to make sure that we're using our technology to the our best ability, all the infrastructure that we have invested in. But again, also being fiscally responsible and really just focusing on those busy, busy days.
Okay. Tell me about the UDOT TravelWise app. I haven't heard of that.
If you go to the UDOT website, you can download or you can get it just at the App Store. So that'll allow you to put in text alerts. So if there are accidents or there's chain control, adverse weather, just other issues, construction, you can sign up for your own text alerts for areas and corridors in which you travel on. So it's, again, the UDOT TravelWise app, and we'll be pushing that out also.
Yeah, what a great resource. And then tell me about the RFP that you said you got the date closed on Friday, the requests.
The date closed Friday. We opened bids this morning, actually, and I think that it's a really interesting exercise because our request has a lot of regional transportation information. It has the ability to connect parking with the buses as well as parking space availability, e-bike share locations, travel planning. And so in a sense, we hope to create more of a universal app for anyone coming to town and wanting to know their choices. So we'll have an update on that shortly.
Wow. So that would be pretty comprehensive to get all the transit schedules and e-bike locations and traffic updates. And
It would be, spots. Yes. It's an aggressive wish list, that's for sure. But we're Park City. That's what we do.
Okay. Did we miss anything? Anything else you wanted to add?
I just wanted to thank everybody on behalf of Park City and Summit County for a successful e-bike season. We have wrapped up our stations here in the city limits of Park City. That's mostly due to the fact that the locations there do impede snow removal and access issues once the snow does arrive. The county does still have their stations deployed and active. So just know if you do bring a bike in from the county, you're going to have to ride it back out. There's no docking stations within the city limits. But again, we want to thank everybody, and we'll be working on a phase two next year with additional locations at the Mark, Deer Valley, And then a few other locations at the top of Maine, and then also some locations out into the county area also.
Okay. Alfred Nantz and Kenzie Colson, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie.
It's the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Joining me now in the studio from Park City Education Foundation, Director Abby McNulty. Also, I have Trailside coding teacher Mike Burton. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Abby, let's just start with you. Live PC, Give PC, you guys actually were one of the top groups there, yeah?
Yeah, it was a huge day for the Education Foundation, and we help support all the schools and clubs and activities by hosting their pages, too. And so they're the ones who really had a big day.
Okay. So you were actually second overall.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
It was great.
And how big of a percentage is this of your annual budget?
Well, so the money raised for Live PC, Give PC, the majority of it, it's 34 specific projects. And so it goes directly to those clubs, activities, and projects. So for us, it's not a portion of the money we raise that's distributed through grants to support activities in the schools.
Okay. One of your fundraisers, though, that is the Beat the
yes,
Call.
Yes, Beat the Call.
So how did that go?
It was good. It was great. There were some challenges this year with Beat the Call that actually we were down a little bit. And so we just ended it. McPolin won the challenge for the most families participating, nearly 50%. So they won a $2,500 challenge grant from the UPS store and also a dance party for all the students, which they're very excited about for this Thursday. That's sponsored by Jaybird.
Okay, talk to me a little bit about why they were down, and this I think had to do with because of the
There were a couple
fees.
Unintended consequence of waiving all fees, academic fees for the school district was that all fees, optional ones included, were also there was no platform to give. So at back to school registration, for example, when a lot of families make their donations, they weren't able to this year. So we just haven't we didn't capture people the way we have in the past, and so we are down about $40,000 in our Beat the Call, which is pretty significant because those funds are raised, are distributed through our teacher grant and school grant program.
Hmm. So what are you going to do then for it next year so that you can bring it back up?
Yeah, we're working with the school district to have a different technology platform that allows for the optional fees. And, you know, we'll still probably continue, maybe do a year-end appeal to families, for example, who haven't yet had a chance to give.
Okay. Well, let's bring Mike into the conversation. I introduced you as a coding teacher. Is that what you do? I mean, you teach all of the kids there how to code?
Yeah. So this year we're now K through fifth grade, which is a pretty big deal for the project. We call it coding. It's kind of a general understanding of computer science. We've named the project coding project, I guess.
All right. So that means everybody in the school is actually what?
Yeah.
Goes to a class with you?
Yeah,
once
so
a week? Or?
At each elementary, it's a little different how the kids receive coding. But at Trailside, I'm considered a specialist. So the students come to see me once a week, and we do it in 6-week blocks. So right now I'm seeing kindergarten first and second. And then the next 6 weeks, I'll see third, fourth, and fifth.
And for all the people who might think computer science and coding, they may not understand all the wonderful things that come with it. And Mike talks about that.
When most people think of coding, they think of syntax and parentheses and kind of text-based code. But at the elementary, we focus on a lot of different things. And the things that we're seeing from it are students learning how to persevere, creating, collaborating, communicating, learning how to critically think. And we teach that all of those things explicitly through the program. So we have a few different kinds of lessons that we use. We do use software programs, and we use a number of those. But we also do what we call unplug lessons, where the students don't have any devices, and we work on kind of coding fundamentals through activities that are not on computers.
All right. Yeah. So some of the software I remember seeing, it was, you know, kind of animated, right? And
right,
and you
yeah.
just and you would try to get like an animal to do something, and it's like the animal couldn't do it unless you did it correctly. And
yeah.
that's what just teaching the progress of
Yeah. So you know, some of the vocabulary that we concentrate on are like the word algorithm, so steps to complete a task. And so with those programs, they use a program called or a type of coding called Blockly, and it's a certain language where they're putting puzzle pieces together in order for those characters to move and create those projects that they want to create. So it's really cool because, you know, they're creating those algorithms and they have to have them in sequence in the order that they need to have them in order for those characters to move like they would like them. So it's a really cool process and really great way for students to be able to create their own projects, which is a huge component of this. Just that those digital creations, you know, because this is the world we live in, and these students are going to have such an advantage understanding how that works.
So, I mean, just like any kid has an aptitude for math or foreign language or language arts or music, do kids have different kids have an aptitude just for this kind of thinking as well?
Yeah, I mean, you know, one thing that we're seeing, you know, this is our fourth year now, is that all students are super engaged in what we do, because this is really their world. This is what they're doing at home, but this is more of an educational setting where they're actually doing explicit things that are teaching them something, you know, so kind of that game-based thought. But yeah, you know, all populations, so our students that receive special services, excelling. Like I've had a number of students that receive special ed services that excel, maybe even more than the general population in this class.
Yeah, and when we talk about Excel, I mean, you know, with math, you can figure out a problem. With language arts, you can write a story. I mean, what do you do after taking a class like this?
Yeah, well, you know, really our thought behind this is, and the reason why I feel like, you know, our Park City students have such an advantage is that they're understanding how technology works, which, you know, in turn in the future will allow them to create that technology to basically save us from ourselves, right? So, I mean, it's really exciting for me to see it all happen and to be one of the only school districts in the country that are offering such a program to all students in the elementary is pretty exciting, and we're pretty lucky here in Park City to have something like that.
Yeah, so do you have somebody, I mean, is there somebody like Mike at then all of the elementary schools?
Yes.
Yeah, so Crystal Giles at Jeremy, Kim Quap at Parley's Park, and then Craig Roberson at McPullen.
All right, is this something that's funded then by the Ed Foundation?
It's a partnership of funding with the Education Foundation and the Park City School District. So the Ed Foundation was able to originally seed some of the funding for the staff, and that's now taken over by Park City School District, and now we're able to support some of the interesting add-ons, the professional development for the teachers, and some of the robotics that complement the coding classroom.
Okay.
And if I might add, Park City Ed Foundation has, you know, really, really supported us in what we're doing as far as the PD component. Because like I said, there weren't, especially 4 years ago, too many school districts doing what we were doing. And so we really had to seek out these professional development opportunities on our own. And Park City Ed Foundation was instrumental in that. So we really appreciate it.
So what happens in middle school, 6th, 7th?
Yeah, it rolls up. So this year, Mike and his team are planning for what that looks like at Ecker Hill, and then it will go all the way to 12th grade as these students progress. So as Mike said, this is, you know, everything we consume is built on code, and so our kids have this huge leg up in understanding, you know, their world. But I also, just a shout out to Mike and his team, too. These guys have been pioneers in this space. I mean, they really created a program from scratch, and it's pretty amazing what they've done, and it's been so much fun to watch it. And I have kids that are in the program, and they love it. It's amazing what they do.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming by. Mike Burton and Amy McNulty, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:45. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, November is National Diabetes Awareness Month. The Summit County Health Department and People's Health Clinic teaming up to spread awareness. In the studio with details, I have Clinic Director Beth Armstrong along with Development Director Amy Armour. Good morning.
Good morning,
Good
Leslie.
Good morning. So, Beth, for the patients that you see at the clinic, I mean, how bad of a problem is diabetes?
I think it's bad everywhere. It's, you know, they just revised the number of undiagnosed diabetics and pre-diabetics from 80 million in the country to 84 million. So, and those are people who are just walking around, and that also obviously includes those who know that they have it, but there's a lot of people that walk among us every day that don't realize that they have this disease.
Yeah, so are we talking just type 2 or are we talking type 1 as well?
Yeah, that's a good question.
That includes type 1.
It does include type 1.
But type 1 only counts for 5 to 10% of diabetes. The majority of diabetes is type 2. Oh.
And the majority that we see at the clinic is type 2.
And again, this is something that can be reversed based on diet and exercise?
Absolutely. Type 2 is a lifestyle disease, so most of the time it can be reversed through lifestyle, healthy eating, and exercise. That's why if the sooner you find out if you're at risk for diabetes, if it runs in your family, if you are a member of an ethnic group where you're more at risk, the sooner you find out that you may be at risk, the quicker you can reverse any you know, complications.
Yeah. And it's a devastating disease, right, if left unchecked.
Mm. Absolutely. The complications, you know, of having high blood sugars, that can result in amputations, heart disease, eye disease, kidney disease. I mean, it is devastating. So, again, the sooner you find out that you're at risk.
All right. So you've got a health fair scheduled for Wednesday. Tell me about this.
So on this Wednesday from 3 to 6, I always want to say 7. Well, we'll extend it if we have to. It's open to anyone, not just normally at the clinic. We provide health care for the uninsured in Summit and Wasatch County. But for this particular day and this event, anyone in town or that, you know, knows that it's happening can come, whether you have insurance or not. If you just want to be tested and check to see if you're concerned or have any of the indications that you may have diabetes or pre-diabetes, we ask that you come, because if we're going to test you, we'll ask you questions, and then we'll actually do A1C testing if the questions that we ask you determine that you are at risk.
So the 1C test, is that's the one that looks at blood over
A1C test is a 3-month average of your blood sugar. So if you are at a certain level, then that may be an indicator that you have pre-diabetes or diabetes.
Right, and it doesn't have to be fasting. You can just come in, and there's no reservations required. Just come in.
And that's just a simple blood?
It is a blood prick. So I just wanted to mention that we're partnering with the Summit County Health Department, the American Diabetes Association, Intermountain, the MARC. We have some great partners, and each will perform something different. So, for instance, Summit County will do a risk assessment test. We're doing blood glucose testing. The Wasatch Health Department is doing A1C testing. The MARC is doing BMI testing. So we will record all of this really important information for you so you can take it to your health provider. Or if you don't have a health provider or health insurance, you can come to People's Health Clinic.
Okay. So again, it's all free?
All free from 3 to 6 this Wednesday the 14th.
Okay. Anything else you want people to know?
No. Just come get tested.
Okay.
Hey, thank you. Thanks, Leslie.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:48. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. KPCW News Time now, 8:50. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, with a goal of 450 unique donors for the 2018 Live PC Give PC, Park City's Day of Giving on Friday was another success, reaching that goal and more. In the studio with details from the Park City Community Foundation, Ollie Wilder and Mike Ruzek. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
So congratulations, because we did it one more time, and I guess, you know, we being everybody in the community who contributed.
That's right. We had a goal of 4,500 donors, not 450.
Oh, yeah, right.
Which would have been a really easy goal. But we actually hit 4,790 donors, which is just amazing. And kind of with that, dollar-wise, where we were just slightly over 2 million last year. We hit 2.4 and change million this year, which is really just remarkable. And what a great day.
Yeah. So at what time did you hit your goal of 4,500?
I think it was about 10?
Yeah, 9:30 or 10, somewhere in that zone. It was actually during one of the power hours, which was interesting. Those power hours, which ended up being at 11, 3, and 9, there really was a little surge of donors and donations happening right at those times. So it was fun to see as well. So it was soon thereafter that we crossed that 4,500, and then it just kept ticking.
Yeah. So again, those power hours were an opportunity for people, what, to get another $20 toward the...
Right. The last one was an extra $20 that was put on top of any donation that was put forth by the Epic Promise and Park City Mountain.
Right. And so the next 200 donations or unique donor donations after each of those hours started would get you 20 extra dollars. So $4,000 each time. There was actually $12,000 in play in those three power hours. And yeah, that was Vail Resorts, Epic Promise, and Park City Mountain that put that money forward for us.
Okay. I was going to say, yeah, that you had to cap it.
Right. Exactly.
So a record on both accounts then.
Right.
You had an overall leaderboard that broke down into, again, overall and then five different themes. So how did we do there?
Well, once again, Mountain Trails Foundation beat everybody. They had 880 donors for that one organization. So they win the first prize of $2,500 on the All Nonprofits Leaderboard, which is also sponsored by Vail Resorts, Epic Promise, and Park City Mountain. Second place on that was Park City Education Foundation, which you were just talking to. They get $1,500 for that, which they then, I think, prorate among all those different projects that they raise money for. Nuzzles & Co. came in third with 562 donors, and they get $1,250. Then going through all the other leaderboards, Caring for Each Other leaderboard sponsored by Intermountain Park City Hospital. People's Health Clinic got the $1,250 first prize. Peace House second at $750, and the Hope Alliance for $500. The next leaderboard was Energizing and Enlivening, and that was sponsored by Park City Community Foundation. KPCW came in first, so you guys get the $1,250 first prize on that. Mountain Town Music came in second, and Kimball Arts Center came in third. You and KPCW and Mountain Town Music tied last year, so nice work knocking them off.
You beat Brian up by 29 people, to his chagrin.
The Keep On Moving leaderboards, also sponsored by Park City Community Foundation. National Ability Center came at the top of that, then Youth Sports Alliance, and then Park City Ski and Snowboard. Protecting Where We Play, Summit Land Conservancy got the first prize, Recycle Utah second, and Bill White Farms third. That's their first time in the running here. And the last of the specific leaderboards, Sparking Minds, which is around education, Eats Park City came in first, PC Tots second, and Joseph James Morelli Scholarship Fund came in third. So those are all the winners of the extra money, and it's cool to see 18 nonprofits got some extra cash prizes for the most number of donors in their category.
Yeah, so since we're meeting the goals every year, do we need to think about how we reset them?
Well, and that was one of the big things this year was moving away from a dollar goal to a donor goal, which is, you know, in light of it being a community event, it really resonates with the fact that we want more donors and getting kids involved and getting other people that haven't been aware of LFPC, Give PC involved. So we'll go back to the drawing board and see, you know, what we change where, but so far seems to be working quite well.
Yeah, it's certainly working. I'm wondering, though, if the numbers are really reflective of that much growth that we're seeing, or is it just that the organizations are getting smarter about how donations are being reported? I mean, are people just kind of holding off through the year?
I don't think that's the case. No. I mean, if you look at online donations alone, so it's interesting, of the $2.4 million, $1.1 million actually came in online on the platform, and the rest of it gets reported by the nonprofits as other gifts that are associated with LivePC, GivePC. But that $1.1 million in online gifts is up from just over $900,000 the year before. So there's no way to fake that. I mean, these are online gifts that are made on the platform. So
and those are donors that weren't counted either on the, we're just counting online donors as the unique donors.
Right, so the offline donors don't get counted for the prizes and for the for our big goal. So, I mean, these are very real people that are really giving. And you're right, the nonprofits are getting better at actually getting the word out and, you know, getting people rallying for the cause.
Sure. I think that's the biggest element right there. I mean, looking year over year, matching grant, there was 571,000 in matching grants, which is a 53% bump from last year. So that really just shows that the nonprofits are have realized and figured out how to use this day and leverage this day and leverage their donor bases to make this the success it is. So I think it's great. And 71% of the organizations had matching grants, which is up from, 60%
of the 114, about a little over half had matching grants.
A 71% bump from last year.
Right, that's a big bump, but it shows you that there's still room for growth. There are a lot of nonprofits that actually still didn't have matching grants, and they might have done even better. So, you know, I think there's still room here.
So that's it, the organization needs to go out and find the company or...
Right. Often an individual donor or a company that each individual nonprofit goes out and says, hey, would you be willing to put up a $1,000 matching grant with us? And sometimes it happens serendipitously. Someone makes a donation and says, you're welcome to use this as a matching grant. And they're like, whoa, cool. And I think that helps some of the smaller organizations that weren't quite sure how to do it. But yeah, it's really the initiative of the organizations.
And one quick add-on on the matching side, something that I'll be doing today is my company matches any donations that I make by 25%. So it'd be worth looking into whoever your employer is to see if there is a matching program and then go in and add in your Live PC, Give PC donations and see if they'll match those as well.
Excellent. Yeah. So have you got a date set for 2019?
You know, I was just thinking about that. Do we know when Election Day is? It's usually the Friday after Election Day. So you could help us set it right now if we can figure that out. But no, we'll be announcing that in the coming days, I think. But that's usually when we try to do it. So the likely day is, I'm guessing, something like November 8th or 7th, whatever that Friday
Second
is.
Second Tuesday is the 12th, so that would be the 15th then. November.
Might be. That so we'll double check that, but that's a likely date. It's either that week or the week before.
Okay. All right, guys, anything else you want to add?
Just thank you to the community, to the donors, to the nonprofits, the sponsors, just everybody who came out and made this such an amazing day.
Yeah.
It's a great community event. And all together now in 8 years, this is over $10 million that's been raised by this little day of giving, which is just tremendous for our town. So congratulations to all.
All right. Good job, guys. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Ollie Wilder and Mike Ruzek with the Park City Community Foundation. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW.